BBC Radio Berkshire with Ian Lee.
BBC Radio Berkshire. Ian Lee.
Afternoon, this is Ian Lee, BBC Radio Berkshire. 3 minutes past four. Let's have a little look at the weather, shall we? Hot, basically. I could just say hot and leave it at that. I'll go into a little bit more detail. That's what I'm here for. Fine and very warm afternoon is expected with light winds. Maximum temperature is 25 degrees. That's 77 degrees in old money. This evening, the dry weather will continue overnight. And although it'll be clear at first, some low cloud and hill fog will spread in from the east later in the night. Some patchy mist may develop along the River Thames. For a full 10-day forecast, you can go to bbc.co.uk/Berkshire. So what's coming up on the show today? Well, earlier on in the afternoon, I had a chat with Sir Richard Hadley, the cricketer. Is that a word? I don't think so. I know nothing about cricket. I think I blagged it. And I have to say, what a delightful gentleman he is. He's one of the nicest blokes ever. And I really thought when I said, I don't really like cricket, at that moment, it could have turned nasty. Find out what happens a bit later on. We'll be talking about what's happening at Legoland and also the number of incidents of the police using tasers has increased significantly over the past 4 years. What are your thoughts? Should the police be using tasers? Or do you think they're a little bit taser-friendly?
BBC Radio Berkshire.
And slightly indulge me, if you will. You may have heard me speaking to Mike there. I've had my first ever pork pie today. My first ever pork pie was given to me by Mike Reed off the radio. I flipping loved it. I've been a vegetarian for 25 years. Then about 4 or 5 months ago, I started eating meat. And there's loads of stuff I haven't tasted yet. I love a steak. Oh, I love a steak. I love cheap burgers as well from those cheap burger vans. Is there something meaty that I've probably not tried, steady, that I should be indulging in, please? You can give me a call, 0345 900 1041, or you can text the word BARKS to 81333. Or you can email me, ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. I-A-I-N, please. Afternoon, this is Ian Lee, BBC Radio Berkshire. No, 9 minutes past four. If you want to take part in the show, 0345 900 1041 is the telephone number if you want to give us a call. Now, summer holidays are underway. If you've not booked your holiday, well, shame on you, I think. Surely you should have done it by now. I suppose some of you might be waiting to try and find a last-minute bargain. Well, with all of your best summer holiday advice, his independent travel expert, Izzy Wiggins, from Sherfield on Loddon. Afternoon, Izzy.
Hi.
Surely most people will have booked their holidays by now, won't they?
Not everyone. Some people are still bashing away on the keyboard trying to find something at the moment, so quite a few people still leave at last minute.
Can you really get last minute bargains? Because I know whenever I've tried to book a flight or a train journey, the closer or a hotel, the closer I leave it, the more expensive it is.
Some of the flights are, if you leave it, it's then based on how much the lower seats have gone. Because right, the best price on a flight is always if you book it well in advance.
Yeah. So
if you want to go somewhere long haul especially.
Mm.
And obviously the tour operators try to give you all the benefits earlier to book. So
yeah,
you'll get maybe complimentary half board or an upgrade to a sea view room. So you get little added extras if you do book early.
Where are some good places to go to then? Where are you likely to get some bargains?
Well, at the moment, if you haven't booked anything and you're trying to find something, and when you go onto the internet, a lot of people are doing last minutes on internet.
Yeah.
Places like Greece have got some good deals at the moment.
Oh, so, Elinika.
Yeah.
My wife's half Greek, so we go to Greece all the flipping time.
Oh, I love Greece.
I love Greece. Whereabouts do you go?
Well, I used to go to a little island called Poros.
Oh, I don't know. I've not been to Poros. Mm, oh,
well,
nice.
Well, that's in the Peloponnese area. So
yeah,
you go into Athens and then you do a transfer down, and it's beautiful. It's where all the Athenians go. So
oh, okay.
It's quite nice. And we had, Stelios had his boat there once, which was like a great big sort of 60-storey block of apartments arrived and sort of took all the sunshine away.
Oh, was it painted bright orange?
No. His own private one's not bright orange.
He realises how unattractive that looks in real life.
Yeah.
And Greece, of course, you get fantastic food, you can get cheap booze if that's your thing, and just the clearest water as well in the seas.
It is. And, you know, if you don't mind the accommodation and you're leaving it to last minute, there are some bargains out there. I mean, I phoned some things for families for family of four for 2 weeks in Greece for £1,200.
Wow.
With flights, transfers and accommodation, which is really quite good, and that's in summer holidays.
That is really good.
Yeah.
Because there's always, I mean, the big argument this year has been about how summer holidays are more expensive to go on holidays if you've got kids, and so should we take kids out of school or not? It does seem unfair. I know why holiday companies do it, because they're going to make a shed load of money. But it does seem unfair, doesn't it, that during the summer holidays, you have to pay a premium.
I suppose it's all down to supply and demand in any business. You know, it's a bit like you can go to one concert really cheap, but where it's the latest band that somebody really loves and they're very popular, their tickets are going to sell out much quicker and they're going to be more expensive. So it's like anything on supply and demand. And I do feel sorry for the families, but, you know, the summer holidays happen every year.
But tough.
And for those that don't have children, when the darlings are in school, it's quite a nice time for those people to travel.
I suppose, yeah, I know what you mean. If you haven't got kids, you don't want to, in the middle of March or April, end up on a holiday where suddenly you're surrounded by a load of screaming kids.
Yeah, exactly. And things like cruise ships become very busy with families in the summer holidays, whereas out of the school holidays, they're more an adult environment.
I've never understood the attraction of a cruise ship.
I never had neither, but I've actually done quite a few cruise visits.
Really?
And you can, a lot of the cruise companies, they'll come into the Southampton or into Dover and Dock, and you can go on the ship and have a look.
And could you be stuck on a boat? I know you get to stop and go off and have a look around islands and things, but could you be stuck on a boat for that long with those same people?
They're very easy to lose yourself and not see the same. They are, you know, they are very easy to lose
yourself.
They're that
big.
Which I thought, you know, you wouldn't be able to do. I think I'd actually feel by the end of my stay I'd have a nose bag on, because I would just be eating, because the choices of food is just incredible. And it's 24 hours of dining. You can choose where you want to go, and some of them choose, you can eat any time of day.
Give us, I know we're going to talk about Independent Retail Month as well in a second. Give us another top tip if you're a family of where you might be able to go if you've left it the last minute.
If you want to stay in the UK, there's some of the family resorts, but one of the sort of well-known tour operators that do a lot of family areas, which have got the self-catering, they've still got some really good offers available on the coastal resorts. So that's one. And what's become really popular with a lot of my clients, they're doing little mini vacations. So they may be going away for two nights somewhere.
Oh.
And a lot of the hotels in the UK are doing things like complimentary dinner for one night, or, you know, an afternoon tea. So you drive up to Chester somewhere, have afternoon tea on arrival and an evening in the hotel. And some of these are as cheap as sort of £45 each for the night, including your afternoon tea. So that's quite good.
See, 5 years ago, I'd have gone, oh, that sounds so dull. But now, that sounds perfect.
I've just
turned that age corner. Well, that sounds wonderful.
Exactly. And then a few gin and tonics, nice bottle of wine and a sort of snack in the evening. Yeah. It's done.
It's partly because I've got two young boys, 4 and 2. So anything where it sounds like I might get asleep, which is just like, aha, I see it. Nice hotel. Now listen, what is this you're the co-founder of? The 1012 Business Club?
Yeah, it's a business club that myself and two of my partners, we run in the Berkshire area, Berkshire Bucks. It's really for other independent business owners to get together and to share ideas, collaborate on different business sort of, and we can also tender for things together. So if you've got a couple of different companies doing things.
What kind of companies?
We have everything.
Right.
From accountants, solicitors, travel agents, obviously. We've got a lot of people that do marketing. Mm. So it's an area where, and if there's any local businesses in the area that haven't ever tried the club, so we meet once a month. We've got 5 different venues. People can come, visit, try it and see what they like. And this week, we're actually doing on the 25th Friday, our first ever pop-up retail market. So that's
whereabouts?
Shenfield Grange.
Yep.
Which is just up Shenfield. You can find it on the website if you need directions.
Yes.
And we've got over 20 stallholders are going to be there, and it's open to the public, free of charge to come.
These pop-up markets are becoming very popular. As the high street kind of evolves, and is it dying? I don't know. But as the way we shop and the way we interact with businesses is changing, these pop-up markets are really starting to take off, aren't they?
Well, they are. And the Independent Retailer Month this month, they claim that for every pound spent locally, 50 to 70 pence of that pound goes back into the local community. Mm. So, you know, if you are going to buy something today, you know, think local, because that money will be regenerated back locally as well.
If people want to find out more about this, is there a website? Where can they go?
There is, the 10-12businessclub.co.uk.
Izzy, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
I hope that's a great success. I'm a big one for supporting local industry and local shops and local retailers.
Good.
And hopefully someone's got some holiday ideas off you as well.
Hopefully, yeah.
Izzy, thank you very much. Nice to meet you. Right, 0345 900 1041.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Travel you trust.
Every 15 minutes.
And as it happens.
Right, let's get the latest travel of... Oh, it's 4:16. I do apologise, shall we? Let's have a little look and see what's happening. The M25 clockwise, junction 14 to junction 16, it's busy. And anti-clockwise, junction 13 to junction 11. Hey, guess what, guys? Yeah, it's busy. The M3 southbound, junction 2 to junction 3, queuing traffic coming off the M25, so that's all kind of tied in there. Caversham, slow traffic in all directions towards the bridge. Peppard Road, Prospect Street and Church Street are all busy at the moment. Henley, Reading Road, slow from Harpston Road to Hart Street. Grays Road is also very busy towards town tonight. And let's have one more, shall we? Ascot to London Road, queues from Long Hill Road to Heatherwood Roundabout.
See Berkshire's travel cameras online
at bbc.co.uk/Berkshire.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
The Andrew Peat Show.
Find out tomorrow with me, Phil Kennedy, from 7.
Part of it.
I do apologise. This is me sitting in for Phil. In a few minutes, you can hear a little taster of what happened when I spoke to Sir Richard Hadley. Now, most of you will know who he is. He's a cricketing legend, it turns out. Well, I don't know anything about cricket. See how we got on in a bit. That's George Ezra in Budapest. He's reminding me of the gentleman who called up yesterday to yodel. If you missed yesterday's show, we had an older gentleman who called up and claimed he'd once yodeled upside down. We got him to demonstrate his yodeling. Boy, oh boy, was he talented in ways we can only imagine. 0345 900 1041. After being a vegetarian for 25 years, I'm back on the meat. So far, what I've eaten, I've enjoyed. Are there any little secret meat delicacies that you can recommend that I should be indulging in? I feel a little bit I'm betraying myself a little bit by giving up being a vegetarian. But man alive, no one told me steaks were so delicious. So delicious. You can give us a call or you can email me, ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. Now, the world's fastest bowler, cricketing legend Sir Richard Hadley, is in the UK at the moment talking about the ICC Cricket World Cup, which is in his hometown of Christchurch in New Zealand. I got to speak to him earlier on, and I admitted I'm not much of a cricket fan and needed the game explaining to me.
Well, it's called a gentleman's game.
Well, that's me out then.
And that's the hours of play. Look, to me, Test cricket is still the ultimate. It's part of the tradition and history of the game. Okay, it might take 5 days and you might get a boring draw, but you know, from a technical, physical, tactical point of view, you know, all these sort of things come into play in changing conditions over a period of time. But clearly that doesn't suit all fans of cricket. That's why the 50-over game was introduced, and more recently, the last few years, the T20 game, all over in 3 hours. The kids and the families come down to that. You know, the players do what they do in a very short period of time, and you get some very exciting results. So, you know, whilst I'm a traditionalist and like the Test game, I understand that the one-day formats are hugely important for the sustainability and financial side of the game, that all three games have got to coexist.
You're one of the few people I've spoken to, Sir Richard, who you have a bronze bust of you outside the Christchurch Arts Centre. Is that weird? Is that strange seeing that?
It's a bit weird. Mind you, I'm one of 12. It's right. Called the Canterbury, what do they call them, heroes.
The local,
or
12
legends.
Local heroes, I think.
Yeah, local heroes, yeah. That's right. So 12 people who have been selected because they made a contribution to the Christchurch Canterbury area in all sorts of fields. I think I might be the only sports person in the 12. But yeah, there's a bronze bust there. It's all 12 are together, so you can walk down a little sort of pathway and appreciate what it's about, but the seagulls are enjoying my head at the moment.
That's always the worry, that you go along and it's covered in bird poop, or someone's put a road cone on your head, or you know, done something awful like
that.
Well,
it's the same colour as my hair at the moment, so it's a natural fit.
So in conclusion, Sir Richard, New Zealand is the place to come to for sporting events, for the scenery, for the lovely people.
Yep, absolutely. In the Cricket World Cup, February, March. So that 6-week period will be great for the cricketing fans. And in between games, there's opportunities to do all sorts of things. Look, we've got great culture. We've got art. We've got music. We've got great shops, great scenery around the country. All sorts of touristy trips that people can do. So, you know, make a good holiday of it and come out and support your team.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Berkshire News and Berkshire Stories with Ian Lee.
Afternoon, this is Ian Lee, BBC Radio Berkshire, sitting in for Phil. Busy, busy show this afternoon. Coming up, we'll be finding out what on earth is going on at Legoland. And also, we'll be talking in about 40 minutes' time or so about tasers. The number of incidents of police using tasers has increased by a huge percentage. Does that concern you at all? Are you slightly worried about that? I guess you could fall into one of two camps. There are those people who think, well, do you know what? If you're going to be a crook, you deserve what you're going to get. Or you may be one of the other side who thinks, well, hang on a second, police carrying tasers is not exactly the way we want our police force to be. I'm of an age where I still get shocked if I go to an airport or even some towns and cities. If I see a copper with a gun or a machine gun, I still feel very, very uncomfortable. So the thought that they are tasering people, I'll give you the numbers a little bit later on. The numbers may surprise you. What do you reckon? 0345 900 1041. 0345 900 1041. And also, I'm an ex-vegetarian. I'm now a meat eater. I need your recommendations of bits of meat I can sink my teeth into. Please, it's nearly 4:30.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Travel you trust.
Every 15 minutes.
And as it happens.
Well, let's have a little bit of travel. The M25 clockwise, junction 14 to junction 16. It's busy, and it's also busy anti-clockwise, 13 to 11. The M4 London bound, junction 15, is queuing traffic onto the M25. Entry slip lane is especially busy. The M3 southbound, junction 2 to junction 3, queuing traffic coming off of the M25. Let's just do a couple more, shall we? Caversham, slow traffic in all directions towards the bridge. Peppard Road, Prospect Street and Church Street are all particularly busy tonight. And in Ascot, London Road, queues from Long Hill to Heatherwood Roundabout.
See Berkshire's travel cameras online
at bbc.co.uk/Berkshire.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
It's 4:30. Let's get the latest news now. Here's Tara Maxwell. Right, let's get the sport now. Here's Nick Johnson. Nick, what have you got?
Well, Ian, well, Alistair Cook says he won't walk away from the England captaincy, despite admitting he's in the darkest place of his career.
Now, this is cricket. We're back to cricket.
Cricket yes.
Seems to be the theme here on today's show. And I can certainly put my cards on the table. Yes. I wouldn't ask you to display yours. I know nothing about cricket. But to say that you are in the darkest place of your career, but you're going to stay there, I don't know if that's bravery or madness.
Well, I guess it depends on the certain. I mean, he's definitely pushing on through, isn't he? I mean,
well, kind of. And listen, I spoke to Hadley earlier on.
Yes, yes.
He's a very, very nice gentleman. And when I told him I didn't know anything about cricket, I was expecting him to, in a rather gruff Kiwi voice, tell me to jog on in no uncertain terms. but he tried to sell it to me. He tried to explain cricket. I don't get a game that lasts 4 days and you stop for lunch. How is that a sport?
Well, I've been told. Now, I haven't been to see a cricket game myself personally, but I've been told a lot of it is about the atmosphere. Oh. So it's a nice bit of cricket going on. You've got a game in front of you, but you go with your friends.
Yeah.
You have some drinks, you have some food.
Or you could just go to a restaurant.
Or you could go to a restaurant and sit in the park.
Yeah, and you're not sat there watching a boring cricket. I don't know. I tell you what we'll do. We'll put this out there because he was such a nice gentleman. I want to give it the benefit of the doubt. Mm. If anybody can phone up this evening and try and sell cricket to me, because there'll be lots of people listening who are huge cricket fans. Maybe they play it. Maybe they go and watch these games. If anybody can sell cricket to me this evening, 0345 900 1041.
We'll challenge see. Extended.
The challenge is extended. Coming up in a few minutes. We'll get the latest from Shem about what we could be watching on television tonight. But before that, happy birthday, Your Royal Highness. Is that what you would say? It's Prince George's first birthday today, and to mark the occasion, Legoland Windsor have created a Lego replica of the Prince. Well, Lauren Moss is from Legoland and can tell us about it now. Lauren, with the greatest respect, he's only a baby. He's tiny, isn't he?
Hi, Phil. Yes, he is tiny, and he's actually very tiny this time round as well. He's made of just 15 bricks in Miniland at the moment.
15 bricks?
15 bricks.
That wouldn't have taken much time, would it?
Well, the whole scene in itself took around 20 hours.
Oh, okay. So why have you decided to do this?
Well, we wanted to celebrate his birthday, and, you know, we thought, what better way than throwing him a royal garden party to mark the occasion?
Wow. Is there any chance of him popping down there one day?
Oh, we would love to have them down with his parents one day, and we really hope that they'll sort of enjoy the way we've depicted his first birthday for him.
Would you be able to give them some kind of discount or something?
Oh, who knows? Who knows?
Who knows? So tell me, if I were to come down there, where exactly is this display? I know Legoland very well because I live near Legoland.
Okay.
And one of the benefits of living near Legoland is every November when you have those fantastic firework displays, we stand in our garden, we get it for free, and it's awesome. So thank you for that, Laura.
They are a fantastic display.
They are wonderful. So if I come down, where would I find Prince George and describe the scene?
So you would find Prince George in the grounds of our miniature Buckingham Palace in Miniland. Buckingham Palace itself is made up of 36,000 Lego bricks. And then the scene that we've created for Prince George's birthday includes, obviously, the young prince, and he's enjoying traditional party food with jelly and ice cream. And he's also joined by all of the other royal guests. He's got a 3-centimetre-tall birthday cake, and even Lupo the dog has joined the party as well.
Fantastic. It's brilliant, because my boys love it there, and they like some of the rides. They're a bit too young for some of them, but they still love that bit in the middle with all the Lego. That still draws kids to it. I've never been a fan of Lego, Lauren. I know, it's a crime to say it these days. What is it that makes it so special for kids?
I think, well, Miniland itself is one of our most popular attractions because of the way it recreates some of the most famous landscapes from around the world. So you get to see them all recreated in miniature in Lego, and there's about 40 million Lego bricks in the whole of Miniland, so it's pretty impressive to see, especially when you're that small.
It gets a little bit hectic there, doesn't it, from time to time?
It can be busy over the summer periods, but we always recommend that people really plan their day and head to some of the busier rides at lunchtime, that sort of thing. But it's a fantastic family day out for everyone, especially when the sun's shining like it is today.
Yeah. What's your favourite bit of Legoland? Is it the rides? What is it for you?
My favourite part of Legoland would probably have to be Miniland.
Yeah. Lauren, listen, I'm sure you don't even need to plug Legoland. That place is always busy. I'm sure at some point you might even have to turn people away. Listen, it's a great place, and I'm sure you're going to have a fantastic summer as per usual. Lauren, I appreciate your time. It's Lauren Moss from Legoland. There, it's always busy there, for goodness sake. I know, I live right next door to it. The road past my house, it's a nightmare at times, but it's always very, very busy. Now, in 1982, Nigel Havers and Martin Jarvis appeared in Oscar Wilde's The Importance of Being Earnest at the National Theatre. You may remember we were talking about this yesterday, that they're playing the same roles in a new West End production that boasts a cast with an average age of nearly 70. Well, on yesterday's show, I was asking for Berkshire's elderly performers to get in touch. We had a woman who phoned up who'd seen Johnny Mathis performing. He was 78. But I wanted a local performer to contact me. Boy, oh boy, were we lucky. Did we come up trumps? Bernard from Reading is in his 70s and, well, he likes to yodel.
More recently, now I'm less athletic than I used to be.
Yes.
I thought, well, come on. Has anyone ever yodeled upside down on an octopus ride at a fun fair?
I often wonder that at night time. It keeps me awake, Bernard.
Well put, yes.
Yes. So had anybody done that before? And if not, I'm guessing you went and had a crack, did you?
Yeah, I did. I pulled it off. It's just a low-key charity, effort. I like to be original if I'm going to do anything for charity.
So hang on, you said that you do other... we'll get to... You're not getting off scot-free. You're going to yodel later. But you say you kind of do experimental physical things. What other things have you done, Bernard?
Well, actually, the one that I ought to be best known for, but I'm not, dreadful story, really.
Oh, dear.
Only one person living was a witness, and there ought to have been thousands, you know.
What happened?
On the exact anniversary of the outbreak of World War II,
yes,
I appeared in a race in London, a one-mile race, and I ran all the distance from the cenotaph to Earl Hay's fat statue on Hell Breath. I was then 51. And
you held your breath?
Yes.
How,
well, this, it's getting over 200 yards, perhaps only 180, you know.
Blimey.
But this is what I pledged to do. I thought, well, that's something worth doing. That will, you know, capture the imagination.
Yes.
But, of course, the commentator either hadn't been given my notes or hadn't read them.
Oh.
And he mistook me for the, because I was coming in so late and so fast, that's 4-minute mile pace we're talking about here for the last spell, you see.
Yes.
He mistook me for the leader of the next race.
Oh, dear. Bernard. Listen, Bernard, we
absolute disaster.
What a plum that gentleman was. We're going to have to go in a second, but Bernard, can we end with some yodeling, please?
Yeah, I expect so. I'm a bit rusty. Hang on, let's get down to it.
Go on, Bernard.
No, that's better. I got another one.
Afternoon, this is Ian Lee, BBC Radio Berkshire. It's 5:15. Coming up, we'll be talking about the increased use in police tasers. Does it bother you in the slightest, or do you think it's a good thing? 0345 900 1041. We'll also be finding out from Shem what you should be watching on the TV.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Travel you trust.
Every 15 minutes.
And as it happens.
But before that, let's get some of the travel. The M25 clockwise, junction 14 to junction 16, there's queuing traffic. And anti-clockwise, 13 to 11, very, very busy. The M4 westbound, junction 4B to junction 5, there's slow traffic due to a broken down vehicle. And the M3 southbound, junction 2 to junction 3, queuing traffic coming off the M25. Right.
Get the latest travel you trust online.
bbc.co.uk/Berkshire.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
It's 4:47. Here's the news now with Tara Maxwell.
In sport, Greg Dyke has told the BBC there's no doubt that the 2022 World Cup in Qatar won't be held in the summer on safety grounds.
Well, yeah, it's going to be really, really hot, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know much about Qatar, but I know that it is one of the hottest places in the world.
Yes.
Why would you want to have a football match there?
You wouldn't.
Thank you very much, Tara. Excellent stuff indeed. Right, I'm joined again by Shem. Shem, nice to talk to you again.
Yes.
You've got some more TV choices for this evening.
Yeah, only a couple tonight, because
Why?
There's a lot of regular stuff on the channels.
Come on, man, put your finger out.
Well,
it's a bit slack.
Exactly.
Poor show.
The BBC, they're going to clear the decks come tomorrow, and you won't get anything other than Commonwealth Games on BBC One or indeed BBC Three.
I, permission to speak freely?
Go on.
This is blasphemy amongst the BBC, so yeah. I have to whisper it. I can't stand sport. I don't like sport. So we've had the blooming, what was it, the World Cup.
The World Cup.
We've had the tennis, Wimbledon?
Yeah.
And now we've got the Commonwealth Games. And then the football season will start
again. You missed the golf all this weekend, which was fantastic.
No, it wasn't. It was really, really dull, Shem, and you just don't appreciate that. How long does the Commonwealth Games go on for?
It's, I think, 11 days in total.
That's not too bad.
Yeah.
I don't mind the short runs. 400 metres and below, I can kind of enjoy that because it's quick, but the rest of it...
So you're not going to be watching hour after hour of hockey or
I suspect not. Well, okay, so what have we got? We've only got two shows. What have we got tonight then?
Well, we'll start off with the new series of Coast, the second programme of that, and we have got Secret Paths, around Britain. So basically, very not well-known sort of walks around the coastline
yep.
that take you to some quite wondrous sites. Nick Crane, who is the sort of, he's the BBC's map man, he's on coast, he's always doing walking. He's walking his greatest walk, a three-day coastal odyssey, he describes it, around Cape Roth. I didn't even know there was a Cape Roth in Britain, but I think it's up in Scotland. Anyway, he's going to show us that. And, you know, Coast is one of those programmes that's sort of been on forever and ever yeah. and ever. It was Series 9 now, I think. And they've done every bit of coast around Britain and sort of France and Holland, you name it. It was sort of running out of coast, I would think. But no, they've come up with some new things, so I should be looking forward to that.
Are you a walker, Shem? I myself am a very lazy man. You may have got that from my anti-sport rant.
Yeah.
I'm a very lazy man. So I like watching these programmes from mm-hmm. my sofa while I'm eating a two-for-one pizza,
mm-hmm.
But the actual thought of going out and doing these walks is a little bit beyond me.
Well, you see, I cheat slightly because I only walk where... up in Norfolk, where it's very, very flat.
Yeah,
I can't do hills. Not remotely interested in hills. So walking in Scotland, I don't think would be particularly interesting to me. But no, I can understand your worry. I have many, many children, and they have a very similar attitude to yours. In they like watching it, they don't like doing it.
But you say many, many children, Shem. How many is many?
I have
many.
Four daughters.
Oh blimey!
None of whom have excelled at any physical activity that I can think of.
I've got two boys. They're four and two, and they won't. They're completely nuts. They won't sit down for a second.
No. Well, that's there may be the e-numbers, but no, I know what you mean. Boys, very different. Girls, far more sedentary if they've got any sense about them.
Okay, so we've got Coast, BBC Two at 9 o'clock, 10:45 on BBC One. What have we got?
We've got Sir Chris Hoy, How to Win Gold. Now, I know this may not be your cup of tea because he's going to explain to you how the dedication needed to win a gold medal. Now, he's roping in some people like Sir Steve Redgrave, who, of course, his big thing was the fact that he would train on Christmas Day, not because it made him any faster or better, just safe in the knowledge that his opponents were all sitting around eating Christmas dinner and he wasn't. Which, you know, gives you the psychological advantage. And that seems to be the message here. I mean, when he's talking to Andy Murray, Rebecca Adlington, all these very, very accomplished athletes, is that you have to not think about it very much. Because the more you think about it, the more the fear comes in and the more chance are you are likely to lose.
Look, still, Christmas Day, though. Christmas Day. Whatever your religious beliefs or otherwise, Christmas Day. You know for a fact there's good TV on Christmas Day.
There's fantastic TV on Christmas Day, and why would you want to be on a rowing machine down the bottom of the garden?
Poor family.
I don't know, but there you go. Well, he has five gold medals. I don't have one, so that's probably the difference.
Fair play, Shem. I have none as well. Excellent stuff. I will speak to you tomorrow. Cheers, Shem. Indeed.
BBC Radio Berkshire with Ian Lee.
Now, here's the thing. It's not very nice, and if you've got young ears, you might want to cover them up. I don't know. Revenge porn. Anyone? Anyone? It's particularly unpleasant. It's pictures or videos posted online by ex-partners on websites, and it's to get revenge, it's to humiliate, it's to embarrass. It's shocking, it's traumatic, but surprisingly, it's not illegal. Well, now the government is being urged to force internet companies to remove revenge porn websites by making the posting of privately taken adult images a criminal act. Well, Basingstoke MP Maria Miller has been lobbying hard on this issue. Morning, Maria. I nearly moved you a few hundred miles. I do apologise for that. So just tell me exactly what is revenge porn. It sounds particularly unpleasant.
Well, it's when images, and they might be pictures or videos, are posted online. Perhaps pictures and images which were taken, which were private and were never really meant to be made public because they're either sexually explicit or intimate in some way. But they are made public by an ex-partner at the breakdown of a relationship. But not only in those circumstances. Also, there are cases where images are taken off mobile phones by a third party and distributed in a way which is outside of that relationship. And as you rightly say, at the moment, the law really isn't strong enough in this area.
So if I were to take some get some photographs of an ex-partner, and by the way, I can't understand why anybody would take or film, you know, adult photos with a I don't get that at all, but that's what some people are into. If I were to take some nudie photos of an ex-partner and put them on a website, what could happen to me then at the moment?
Well, Well, at the moment, as you say, I mean, it's not illegal to take these sorts of photographs. And at the moment, if somebody puts those onto a website, it really is down to the discretion of the person running the website as to whether or not they're removed. I mean, some, if they are really grossly obscene, would fall within existing laws. But if they are things which aren't grossly obscene, then it's very difficult for people to get them removed. And I've put forward an amendment to the law, which would make the law much clearer so that people could have the law recognise that these things should simply not be made public.
So what's your amendment, Maria?
Well, the amendment would be to the Sexual Offences Act to make sure that the sort of the true impact of these nude and sexual images is recognised in the law. At the moment, the law only bites if they're grossly offensive. What I would want to do is that if any revenge pornography were put online, you know, we'd be recognising that somebody withdrawn their consent for those pictures to be made public, then that would be breaking the law. We're now starting to find examples in other countries where women, and it is mostly women affected, but not exclusively, are losing their jobs over these sorts of images being posted online. In a discussion in the House of Lords yesterday, there was one particular example raised where a Canadian judge had actually been suspended from her job because such images have been posted online, and it really had affected her career. So this isn't just something which is an embarrassment. It's actually something which could fundamentally stop somebody's career.
Let me play devil's advocate for a second. Is part of the responsibility on the woman? If you're a judge, then you would know that taking those photos, you know, even in your private life, is a very, very risky thing to do.
Well, I mean, firstly, I think things that people do throughout their life will change, won't they? What you might do at the age of 20 or even 30 might be different to what you do later on. But let's be really clear here. It's not illegal to take these images as long as you're over the age of 18. But what should be illegal, I think, is somebody, without your consent, distributing them. I mean, there's lots of ways that people can get revenge, but this is a particularly heinous way of doing it.
And is it a big problem in this country?
I believe it is, from the information that I've got from the Safer Internet Centre and also from Women's Aid, both of whom are supporting the approach that I'm taking here to make it a sexual offence. Now up to 40% of domestic violence has some sort of online activity, harassment involved. Not all revenge porn, but some of it will be. And the Safer Internet Centre estimate between 20 and 30 sites have got pictures of UK women, UK individuals on them. So this is a growing problem. And if we look at countries like Canada, the US, New Zealand, Australia, all of them are also looking at ways of stopping this legally because there is an apparent loophole in the law.
Maria, best of luck with it. It's certainly not a trifle at all, is it? It's something we should be taking very, very seriously. Basingstoke MP, Maria Miller.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Travel you trust.
Every 15 minutes.
And as it happens.
I do wonder why people would take those photos, particularly if you're in a position of responsibility. Well, never mind. Travel M25 clockwise, junction 14 to junction 16. There's queuing traffic. Anti-clockwise 13 to junction 11. It's busy around the M3. M4 London bound, junction 15 is queuing traffic onto the M25. That might be junction 5, because junction 5 is the M25. It's junction 15, is it? Okay, right, excellent stuff. Thank you very much indeed. Oh, coming from the M25, I do apologise. M4 westbound, junction 4B to junction 5, slow traffic due to a broken down vehicle. And Reading Cemetery Junction, slow in and out of town around Sutton Seeds. Lots to talk about in the next hour. I'm back on the meat. I've not eaten meat for 25 years, and man alive, I'm back on the meat. Any suggestions of what I should be having? Someone has suggested that a saveloy sausage from the chippy. I'm not sure if that's the best thing to be going for, a saveloy sausage. I think I want something a little bit better than that, don't I? You can text 81333, start your test box, or you can give me a call. 0345 900 1041. We're talking about tasers in a bit as well. Are you worried about the increased use of tasers by the police?
BBC Radio Berkshire with Ian Lee.
Now on BBC Radio Berkshire, Ian Lee.
Afternoon, this is Ian Lee, BBC Radio Berkshire. It's 5 minutes past five already. It's evening time. I think you're allowed to drink booze now, aren't you? I think so, after five. If you're over 18, of course, we don't encourage young drinking. Coming up, we'll be finding out about the increase in the use of tasers by local police. Does that concern you at all, or do you think it's a good thing? What's the latest with the downed Malaysian airliner? And I'll play the rest of the interview at some point with Sir Richard Hadley, the cricketer. I don't get cricket. Is there anybody listening who can sell cricket to me? Any sport that takes 4 days and you stop for lunch, that's not a sport, is it? Is it? 81333, start your text box. You can email Ian, I-A-I-N, .L-E-E at bbc.co.uk, or you can give me a call, 0345 900 1041.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
David Cameron says black boxes from the Malaysia Airlines plane downed in eastern Ukraine will be examined by UK air accident investigators. The Prime Minister has been meeting other EU leaders in Brussels today to discuss further sanctions targeting Moscow. Going into the meeting, the Foreign Secretary, Philip Hammond, said a clear message must be sent.
Everybody wants to see a balanced set of measures as we go forward, but the world has changed since the European Council last week. The events of last Thursday have changed public expectations on us, and we have to send a clear signal from our meeting today.
Well, Bracknell MP Philip Lee has said Britain's response to the downed Malaysian airliner has been too timid. We'll be hearing from him a little bit later, but first let's cross to Ukraine and speak to Yana Shusmeshia from the BBC monitoring team in Kiev. I had a good stab at your name, Yana. I hope I came close to it.
Yeah, very close.
Thank you very much indeed. What's the latest on the situation over there?
Yes, Ian, the main controversy with the aftermath of the plane crash now seems to be on the fate of the black boxes recovered at the crash site, because it was initially reported that they have already been handed over to Malaysia, yet now the Ukrainian media are saying that they may still be on the train which brought the bodies of the victims to the city of Kharkiv, controlled by the Ukrainian government. And actually, just about an hour ago, a senior official said that Ukraine still has not seen the boxes at all, so it is still unclear who will get them and, you know, how this will affect the whole investigation. And as for the other developments, Ukraine's president, Petro Poroshenko, today urged the international community to help stop the supply of weapons and militants through the Russian border. He believes that this was exactly what caused the tragedy. And basically what he said was that the separatists should now get should not get support from Russia anymore, and the world should help ensure that.
It sounds like a very confusing situation, Yana, and no one seems to really know what's going on. If people are saying that the black boxes are here, then they've been given to Malaysia, then they've been... How do we know who to believe in this?
Basically, we don't, because, you know, it's one thing for the Ukrainian media, and the Russian media's narrative is exactly the opposite. So basically what the media commentators here in Ukraine are suggesting, that you listen to what the Ukrainian side says and then you listen to Russia, and then the truth is somewhere in the middle. So that's as much as we can do.
Is it right that Putin has kind of started taking steps towards agreeing with the rest of the world? He's changed his stance slightly, hasn't he?
Well, it's hard to say at the moment. He had this surprise overnight appearance on Russian TV in which he said that Russia would try to influence, you know, the pro-Russian rebels in eastern Ukraine and to ensure that the investigation proceeds as planned. But we have heard statements like this from Putin for the past months, where it seemed that he might be taking steps back and trying to make concessions. But in fact, it only resulted in the further escalation of the conflict, well, according to what the Ukrainian media have been saying. So we are yet to see what will happen.
And Yana, how are Ukrainian citizens reacting to this? They are dragged into an horrific international incident that they want no part of, I'm sure.
Yes, definitely. It's been a huge tragedy for the civilians in eastern Ukraine. From what we saw in the media, basically they're now so sick of this whole military action. They don't care who is bombing them, be it, you know, the Ukrainian army or the separatists. They just want it over. And actually today we had a report from one of the cities in Luhansk region, one of the two troubled regions in the east, who issued an ultimatum to the pro-Russian separatists saying that they should leave the town today or face consequences from the angry civilians, you know.
Yana Yevshmeshkia in Ukraine, thank you very much.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Berkshire News and Berkshire Stories with Ian Lee.
Now, the police watchdog has raised concerns over police officers in England and Wales using tasers at point-blank range despite no longer being trained to do so. The Independent Police Complaints Commission said the technique was purely a means of a pain compliance. Well, BBC Radio Berkshire has been looking at the IPCC report, and Michelle joins me in the studio. Michelle, what are the key findings of this report?
Well, tasers were introduced to UK police forces in 2003, and in this report, the police watchdog said it acknowledged that the taser was a valuable tool in helping police to manage difficult and challenging situations, but forces must do more to guard against its overuse. Now, it warned one technique known as a drive stun, where the taser is held against the subject's body and the trigger pulled, with no probes being fired, causing pain, but not in an incapacitating effect, was still being used in 16% of firings. That's despite officers no longer being trained to deploy the weapon in this fashion. Now, the IPCC called on officers to do more to justify uses of the taser against suspects already in custody or vulnerable people such as children or those with a mental disorder. It said it also wanted to further investigate why some smaller forces were more likely to deploy the device than their larger counterparts.
What about the use of tasers by Thames Valley Police?
Well, no one from Thames Valley Police would talk to us about it today, but earlier in the year, a BBC investigation found that there were five times as many Thames Valley Police officers carrying tasers on our streets today than there were a year ago.
Michelle Cross, thank you very much indeed for that. We can speak now to Sophie Khan from the Police Action Centre, a solicitor who specialises in taser-related injuries, and Peter Nayrud, former Thames Valley Police Constable, who was instrumental in introducing tasers in the UK. Nice to talk to you again. Thank you very much, both of you.
Okay.
Peter, why do you think tasers are so important?
Well, because essentially they're a key part of the police being able to protect the citizen and protect themselves. They were introduced initially to try and prevent the police firing fatally as many times, and then gradually, as lessons have been learnt and as the training has improved, they've been rolled out more widely to deal with other significant violence.
Sophie, you're not a fan of the taser, are you?
I'm not, no, because the use is excessive and they're being used on people who are vulnerable and children, elderly, who have mental health issues. So it's something that, I've campaigned against. It's something I'm going to continue to campaign until there's a change.
If it makes the police officers safer, though, that's got to be a good thing, hasn't it?
It's not about the safety of the officer, it's the safety of the incident at the time. They have to safeguard the member of the public or themselves at that time. So that has to be the test that is applied rather than safety to the officer.
Peter, what is it you make of Sophie saying it's been used on children? And the report also highlights it's been used on people with mental illness, hasn't it?
Well, can I just come back on that rather bizarre comment? Of course it's about the protection of the officer. It's an absolute requirement on chief constables. It was an absolute requirement on me as the chief of Thames Valley to provide adequate protection for my officers. The officer is still a citizen, even though they may be in uniform. So it's not true to differentiate completely between the citizen and the officer. The officer is just as entitled. And the fewer officers there are out there on the street, and they've been cut radically, as you well know, the more protection they need, as they're much less likely to find they've got resources around the corner. But let's come back to the issue of the vulnerable and mentally ill. Unfortunately, as we know from the events that actually led to the introduction of the taser, someone who's mentally ill, who's holding a large edged weapon, is a danger, whether they're mentally ill or not. And the taser is a critical way of preventing the police having to resort to much more lethal force in order to deal with that.
And using it on children?
Well, In my career as a police officer, I had a sergeant when I was an inspector in Southampton who was stabbed in the eye with a barrow by a 12-year-old. They were a pretty large 12-year-old. If that had been a knife, would you or would you not think that a taser might be appropriate to prevent an officer or a citizen being seriously injured? I think the answer is yes, if the weapon is there. And it's you know, you don't want to do it, and it's a clear requirement in the training that you are very careful about trying to avoid using the taser on a youngster. But there are circumstances where to protect life or protect from serious injury, that might well be necessary.
So if he's got a point that there are 12-year-olds and then there are big, strong 12-year-olds that, you know, don't understand the rules and the laws, aren't there?
There are, but it's not for the police officer then to use any weapon on those individuals.
But if that police officer is at risk because that 12-year-old is going to stab them, then surely they do have to protect themselves, don't they?
They have to protect themselves, provided they have used all other alternatives to try to resolve and calm the situation. But what's happening here is that they're not doing anything but tasering people. There's been a 300% rise, and it's something that's unacceptable, and it's something I don't think they have a case that they can continue doing tasering anymore.
Peter?
That's simply not what the IPCC report says. What it's documenting is the increased use because of the increased deployment. And you're absolutely right, the numbers of officers in Thames Valley that have the taser issued to them has increased. The rise is almost exactly in proportion to the number of officers who now carry the device. The level of complaints that IPCC document has not risen disproportionately in line with that. And the report actually is praising quite a lot of the practice and the responsiveness of the police to some of the concerns. And the three areas that they identify of particular concern, I note the service already today, the College of Policing, has already pointed out that those areas are very much in hand.
Does that include using tasers on people in custody?
Yeah, that one I think is one the IPCC quite rightly are paying very close attention to. I can't think of many circumstances where that would ever be justified.
But
and
it does
so,
happen.
And Sophie and her colleagues would be absolutely right in raising that as an issue any time that it occurs.
Peter, am I right that in the last year there have been no fatal shootings by the police, partly because of the increase in the use of tasers?
Well, I think I can't posit, this is not an area where I can do a randomised control experiment to demonstrate that, but if you follow the introduction of the less lethal weapons from 2000 onwards, at a time when we had a very significant number of fatal shootings to the present day, there has been a marked reduction in the number of fatal shootings, and in particular, actually, the number of fatal shootings of exactly the type of citizens, the mentally ill, for example, who were the source of the original concern back when David Blunkett ordered an inquiry into the police use of firearms in 2001.
Sophie, that's got to be a good thing, isn't it?
It's a good thing that the number of firearm incidences are down, but we're talking about the use of tasers today, and the use of tasers is increased. So the training isn't being implemented like the IPCC have said. Whether the suitable officers are being chosen, that's a question mark. Whether there's any kind of monitoring over the taser use, that there's also questions about that. And there is a question about drive stun. Why has drive stun doubled since 2008 when it's not even in the training? Why has that happened? So there's a lot of questions that need to be asked about tasers. I think the debate has to move on to highlight the difficulties around taser training and taser implementation in the forces, because I think that's where the problem lies.
Peter, final word to you.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Training is vital. Monitoring is important. Chief officers should be held to account for the use. But at the end of the day, this is a device that has saved lives far more than it has caused serious injury.
Listen, I appreciate your time, both of you. Peter Nayrud, former Thames Valley Chief Constable, instrumental in introducing tasers into the UK, and Sophie Khan from the Police Action Centre. Your thoughts, please. What are your thoughts? Are you frightened by police using tasers more? Or do you think, actually, look, if it protects them, if it protects you, if it protects me, it sounds like a good idea. 0345 900 1041.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Travel you trust.
Every 15 minutes.
And as it happens.
It's a little bit later than usual, but I thought it was worth pursuing that for a bit. It's 5:20, it's BBC Radio Berkshire. M25 clockwise, junction 12 to 16, there's queuing traffic. M25 anti-clockwise, 13 to 11. Busy, of course, at the M4 London bound, junction 4B, slow traffic onto the M25 from the M4. The entry slip is particularly... It's always busy at that... I know that junction so well. It's always a nightmare. Also on the M4, but this time westbound, junction 4B to junction 5, slow traffic due to a broken down vehicle. And let's just... there's so much going on tonight. Let's pick one at random. Arborfield, School Road, queues from Barkham Road to Eversley Road.
See Berkshire's travel cameras online
at bbc.co.uk/Berkshire.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Let's get the news now. It's Sarah Maxwell.
I feel dirty. And I'll tell you, not just because it's really hot. I've been a vegetarian for 25 years. And then about, it was March, so however long ago that was, I gave up being a vegetarian and I started eating meat. Secretly at first, and then I got right into it. I've been asking for your suggestions on what I should be eating. Peter has said, Ian, you must try a saveloy sausage from the chip shop. Really? So there's got to be better things than that to try. Hey, here's something. Should I tell you the reason why I became a vegetarian? Because I really fancied this girl called Kerry at school, and she was a vegetarian. I thought, oh, if I give up meat, she might be interested. I know. We've got a Berkshire butcher on the line. We've got Royston Hine from Pangbourne. Afternoon, Royston.
Good afternoon, Ian.
I bet when you hear people like me who've come back to your way of thinking, you must be rubbing your hands with glee.
I'm just very pleased for you because it's a good move for you.
The thing is, no one ever told me that steak tastes so good. I had my first steak in April. Man alive, I was sucking the juice out of that bad boy.
Good. Well done.
Royston, what should I be going for? What little treats should I be looking for?
Well, the list is, you know, almost limitless. But you should work your way through everything and try it in all different forms.
Oh.
I mean, you know, a nice bit of chicken, there's nothing wrong with a nice bit of chicken.
Yeah.
You know, and you can do fancy things with it. Get a chicken breast, boned out, have it flattened like an escallop, and then egg and breadcrumb it.
Oh.
You would like that.
Oh, that sounds nice.
All right.
Yeah, I like the texture of chicken. Because a lot of this for me, and I've been speaking to my meat-eating friends, they don't quite get it. A lot of it for me is the texture of the different meats. They all feel different, don't they?
They definitely do. Well, they are different. This is why, you know, my recommendation is you start off with something like chicken.
Yeah.
And then lamb.
Yeah, what lamb.
You know, a nice cutlet or a rack of lamb with a nice coating on the, you know, crust on the back of it. Pork fillet, you know, have it cut as little medallions.
Yeah.
Just tap them down gently and serve it with a nice pepper sauce or something like that.
Now, Royston, sell to me why I should be coming to you in Pangbourne and not going to the butcher in the supermarket. What's different that I'm going to get from you?
Well, you're going to get my lifetime experience for a start, and I go around the farms and I know everything about what we're selling. Now, quite simply, they can't do that at supermarket level or scale, and the sheer volume that they need means they cannot be as selective as I am. So you get the very best product. I've got a fabulous team of staff, highly skilled. We mature the meat. Everything is done properly. Everything is done the old-fashioned way, and you benefit.
Is there any meat that you won't eat? None at all?
No, not recognised meats. I mean, I haven't tried some of the exotics, but I've tried quite a few.
Go on, which are some of the weirder ones you've had?
I've certainly eaten reindeer.
Have you really?
Yes.
Quite chewy, isn't it, reindeer, I've been told?
Well, actually, I found it rather nice. And one way I had it that I thoroughly enjoyed, it was cured and very thinly sliced.
Mm.
And, you know, you had it as an hors d'oeuvre, almost.
Ooh.
Very, very nice.
Have you had horse?
Yes, I have had horse.
Ooh, what was that like?
Well, at a point in my career, I was responsible for some shops in France. So we sold horse meat. So I had to try it. Now, it's not that different to beef, but the texture is spongier.
Yeah.
That's the best description I can give to it.
It's funny, isn't it? Because we get funny in this country about, oh, I couldn't eat a horse, but there's no difference between a horse and a cow, is there? If you're going to eat one meat, you might as well eat all of them.
In theory, yes. But I can understand people and their love affair with horses. Although, to be honest, I have a love affair with all my animals.
Ever had a dog?
Dogs?
Yeah.
No, I've not eaten dog. I'm not into Korean tricks.
Would you not go for a dog?
I suppose in the right circumstances, yeah. If I was overseas, etc.
Yeah,
and that was the thing, I would try, because, yeah. Never say never.
Royston, what's the name of your shop, please, sir?
Greens of Pangbourne.
Fantastic. It's a pleasure to talk to you. Well, I know that I've turned a corner when I'm more prepared to eat a meat that a butcher would consider. I'd totally have a dog. I would totally have a dog. 0345 900 1041.
This is BBC Radio Berkshire.
With Ian Lee.
Now, people in Berkshire are being given the chance to grow their own history by planting free trees as part of a national campaign to commemorate the centenary of the First World War. Over 3,500 trees have been given away so far in Berkshire. Joined by Chris Hickman, who's from the Woodland Trust, which came up with the idea. Chris, what is the idea behind this?
Well, one of the Woodland Trust's main aims is increasing the amount of woodland across the UK. We have a much smaller amount than the rest of Europe, only 13%, so a tiny amount. So we've been giving away free trees for many years now. But to mark the centenary of the First World War, which obviously begins this year, we thought it was a great way for people across England, and in Berkshire in particular, to commemorate the war by planting trees. So the idea is people can apply for tree packs from us, which are absolutely free, so that's great, no cost involved. And they come in different sizes, and then they can plant them in a community space. People can get involved at a planting event. And obviously the great thing is that hopefully those trees will be around for many years to come as well.
Well, what's in a tree pack?
So the tree packs come in different sizes. So there's 30 trees, which is the smallest pack. There's 105 trees or 420 trees.
Hang on, 420 trees are free?
Absolutely. I know. Gosh. It's a bargain, isn't it?
Isn't it just? You don't get that these days. Go on.
I know. They say you don't get anything for nothing, but we are, we're getting rid of that stereotype. But yes, 420 trees. So to give people an idea, that's about the size of a football pitch if you plant them spaced out. So obviously anyone listening who might be a local school, scouts, guides, any sort of community group, or anyone that knows of a green community space that's got the potential to have a few trees in the ground, then they just go on the Woodland Trust website. There's a simple form to fill in, and then the packs will be sent out this autumn. And like we say, the great thing is they're free. It comes with all the advice. So even if you've never planted a tree before, all the advice will be in there in terms of how to plant them, how to manage them and maintain them. And like we say, it's a great way for people to commemorate the First World War. I'm sure many people listening will have relatives that perhaps were involved in some form, and hopefully these trees will be around for decades to come as well.
Now, these trees aren't for your back garden, they're for community areas. I'm assuming you have to get permission from the local council or whoever owns it.
Yeah, exactly. So if people know of a green space, obviously if it is owned by someone else, then you need to get permission of the landowner. But we've been very successful with schools, like I say, hundreds and hundreds of schools across the region have applied for tree packs over the years. Like I say, scout groups, guide groups. So as long as you know who owns the land, find out if they're happy for the trees to go in the ground, ideally get them to fill in the form. Like you said, we've sent out over 3,500 trees already this year. And we've got many more to give away. That's the great thing. It's almost an endless supply,
Where are you getting? How are you funding this then? I am genuinely shocked that you're giving away so much for free.
Well, one of the Trust's key aims is to get more trees in the ground.
Yeah.
So obviously, we have members that pay a membership. We have corporate partners. So we have corporate partners and funders that will actually help us fund these tree packs as well. So we're lucky that people recognise that planting a tree is a very simple thing, but actually it's got so many benefits for wildlife and for people and,
planting tree cover, increasing tree cover in towns and cities as well. It's a really important thing.
And also, it's a great thing to do. If you got kids, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, you plant a tree, and that tree's going to grow with them, isn't it? That's a huge thing that can be a part of their life.
Yeah, exactly. Well, when I was at primary school, when I was, 5, 6, 7, we actually had a tree planting scheme, if you like. And I can still remember the trees I planted when I was a child. And I'm sure if I could remember where they were planted, then I could go back and see them now. And they would be,
sausage. That would be great, Chris, to take your family and say, look, I planted that. That's mine.
Exactly. And that's what, people across the country can do that. People in Berkshire, they can apply for these trees, plant them with the kids. And like you say, it's such a simple act that you can do. But, I've been to so many planting events, and kids love it. They love getting mucky, they love getting stuck in, and it is something that they can return to with their children and their grandchildren as well.
Oh, my four-year-old, he's got a little vegetable patch in the back garden, and the joy of planting something, watering it, he was a bit frustrated at first when nothing was happening, but then when something grows that either he can eat or he feeds to the rabbit, it's magic to them, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah, it requires a bit of patience,
yep.
So we're talking, but even in as little as 5 to 10 years, a tree will be over 6, 8 foot tall, right. So it's a shorter time scale than you think, and like you say, it's really important for kids to understand as well how important it is to look after the environment, and tree planting is a really easy way to do that as well, so
Chris,
we'd encourage everyone to, fill in a form and get some free trees from us.
If people want to get your free trees, where do they go to find them?
So just go to woodlandtrust.org.uk/free-trees, and the deadline is September the 4th, so you've got a good month to 5 weeks to think about it and find an area, fill that form in, and then hopefully we'll get the trees out sometime in the autumn.
Chris, I think it's an absolutely cracking idea. I wish you the very best of luck with that. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Ian. That's great.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Travel you trust.
Every 15 minutes.
And as it happens.
Right, it's 5:33, still busy on the M25, clockwise 12 to junction 16, and also anti-clockwise, junction 13 to junction 11. The M4 London bound, junction 4B, slow traffic onto the M25 from the M4. Hey, if you know that stretch of road, you know it's always busy there. The M3 southbound, junction 2 to junction 3, queuing traffic coming off the M25. Winnersh, Reading Road, stop start from Simon's Lane to King Street Lane, and in Maidenhead, Bath Road, stop start from Glenville Place to St Mark's Road.
Get the latest travel you trust online
at bbc.co.uk/Berkshire.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Let's get the news now. Here's Tara Maxwell. Tara, thank you very much. Let's get the weather now. Here's Alexis Green. Alexis. Oh, no, there we go. I think we're just going to do a little bit of computer magic. The boffins are running around in their white coats, furious. Ah, Alexis, you're there now. Sorry.
Hello.
About that. Hello, Alexis. What you got for us?
Well, Ian, for a full 10-day forecast, log on to our website, bbc.co.uk/Berkshire.
Alexis, thank you very much. Right, Nick's joined me in the studio. Nick, what have you got in terms of sport?
Well, Ian, the Andrew Peat Show.
Find out tomorrow with me, Phil Kennedy, from 7.
Now, be part of it.
I always miss that bit at the end. Afternoon, this is Ian Lee, BBC Radio Berkshire. So, in a second, we're going to hear from Sir Richard Hadley. I spoke to him before the show. He's a cricketer. Now, I had to Google it. I don't know anything about cricket at all. I don't get it. It lasts for 4 days and they have a lunch break. That's not a sport. That's not a sport in the traditional sense, like, I don't know, darts or snooker. Them's sports. Can you, dear listener, sell cricket to me? Can you make cricket work for me? Because I know lots of you listening, you love it. You love a bit of cricket. 0345 900 1041 is the telephone number. Can you sell cricket to me? Jeffrey's in Bracknell. Afternoon, Jeffrey.
Hello, Ian. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Oh, you're going to speak to the great Richard Hadley, one of the world's most fantastic, greatest cricketers from New Zealand, captain New Zealand, and an all-rounder, a superb all-rounder of the highest class, in fact, is world class.
In fact, I'm going to speak to him now, Geoffrey.
There's a game on at Lord's, Hong Kong playing the MCC, but I'm here more in my role as the official ICC Cricket World Cup 2015 ambassador, so we're doing quite a bit of a promotional activity around here, just to let people know that the World Cup 2015 will be co-hosted by Australia and New Zealand, so we want to see people coming to New Zealand because they'll enjoy our country and the tournament, of course.
Well, I have, listen, my brother-in-law is a Kiwi, and the only reason I've not been is I am terrified of that flight. That's a long old flight, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It would be, in general terms, 12 hours from here to, say, Singapore or to LA, and then another 12 hours down to Auckland or Christchurch. So,
why is it worth it, sir? Why is that 24-hour plus journey worth it? What's so good about New Zealand?
Well, it's worth it because New Zealand is a fantastic country made up of two islands way, way down there in the South Pacific. And so once you have that long trip, I can tell you that it's well worthwhile coming to look at our landscape, to enjoy our culture, our heritage, visit the cities. There's all sorts of options to do, whether it be water sports, watching the whales, watching the dolphins, fishing, golf, you name it. We've got it. We're an outdoor country, and
The most amazing scenery as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, particularly the mountain ranges, the Southern Alps, you know, the lakes that we have, particularly down Queenstown and Rotorua, Taupo on the North Island, Queenstown down the South Island, the rivers, of course, the forests, the walks, all these sorts of things, you know, when you come over, just bring something that allows you to do all these things.
Now, Sir Richard, when you go to all of these cricket grounds around the world, do you not feel a little bit jealous? Have you not got itchy fingers and itchy legs and want to get out there and show them how it's really done?
I'm 63 now, and I've got a new hip and new knee, so there's absolutely no way I'll be participating. I find it hard enough playing golf these days.
Really? Do you miss it? I mean, you must miss it. It was such a big part of your life, and you were such a legend when it came to cricket. You must miss that.
No, not the playing side.
Really?
I mean, I had 18 years as an international player for New Zealand, and then I moved into other roles within the game, such as coaching, selection, managing A teams, in the media, doing television, radio, writing about the game, and so I had 5 years off, literally, after 36 consecutive years involvement in the game in one form or the other, and only in the last 8 or 9 months, so I've now become elected onto the New Zealand Cricket Board as a director, so now in the administrative role, and quite enjoying that at the moment.
It's interesting, because you often hear of kind of boxers or football players, they retire and then they've got a hankering to get back in the ring or back on the pitch. You don't have that. You've served your time, as it were, and you're happy to kind of sit back and watch.
Yeah, but I was fortunate, like I guess some sports people in their chosen code, that if you can change direction within the game, once you give it away, then it may give you another career, of course, but it still keeps you involved. And even though I had that 5 years off, I still watched the games either on TV or the odd one down at the ground. But I was just cricketed out. But now I've got a fresh enthusiasm for the game, certainly over the last 12 months. And that's why, as an ambassador of the Cricket World Cup, I'm looking forward to doing some ambassadorial promotional work in New Zealand, particularly around Christchurch. Which
I was about to say, that's where you're from, isn't it, Christchurch?
Yeah, that's right. Born and bred there, educated, families there. And the fact that Christchurch will open the World Cup with the first match, New Zealand-Sri Lanka, 14th of February. That's great for Christchurch, because we've been in rebuild mode since the earthquake in 2010, and it's just letting people know that Christchurch is open for business. We're going to have a new cricketing venue there at the Hagley Oval, a boutique type ground, so that's going to be a wonderful occasion for the area.
Is this the first major sporting event in Christchurch since the earthquake?
Pretty well. In fact, we've had no cricket there, international cricket, for 8 years. No one-day international cricket for the last 6 years, and clearly the earthquake's had a bit to do with that, because it's knocked over a lot of sporting venues. Mm. But that aside, New Zealand as a country has hosted many international world events, particularly Rugby World Cups, 1987, 2011. Coincidentally, the All Blacks won, and so that puts a bit of pressure on the Black Cap cricket team now to win at home.
No need to rub it in, for goodness sakes. Look at you. How does New Zealand do so well in sporting events? I mean, it's tiny, isn't it? Yeah, it has periods in its history where it dominates certain sports.
Well, that's right. We're a small nation, about 4.3 million, so Many say that we punch above our weight in international sport. I think we're a determined race, obviously. Look, we produce world champions and world record holders and Olympic gold medalists, a champion rugby team, of course. Cricket's competitive. We play all sorts of sports. Netball is very strong for us. You know, hockey, we're doing quite well in that particular lady hockey team. So, you know, we're into anything and everything, and, you know, we want to do well.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Travel you trust.
Every 15 minutes.
And as it happens.
Well, Sir Richard Hadley, a very nice guy. He couldn't sell cricket to me. Maybe there are no cricket lovers listening to BBC Radio Berkshire. If you're a fan of it, do call up and try and sell it to me. 0345 900 1041. Right, it's 5:45. Let's get the travel. Hey, the M25, that jam is getting longer. It's now junction 10 to junction 16. At the anti-clockwise, it's junction 13 to junction 11. The M4 westbound, junction 4B to junction 5. There's slow traffic due to a broken down vehicle. Oh, the M3, it's kicking off everywhere now. The M3 northbound, junction 5 to junction 4B. Traffic has been stopped by the Fleet Services. Thank you to Glenn for that. If you've got any more info, you can give us a call. 03 459 311 333.
See Berkshire's travel cameras online
at bbc.co.uk/Berkshire.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Let's get the news now. Here's Tara Maxwell. Afternoon, this is Ian Lee, BBC Radio Berkshire. I'll tell you why I'm giggling. We're arguing over the pronunciation of a certain word. Lido or Lido? I don't know. I'm gonna err on the side of Lido, and then let's see where we get to. The takeover of a dilapidated Grade 2 listed Lido in Reading has been approved. Thames Lido Limited is behind £3 million worth of plans to renovate Kingsmeadow Baths into a spa complex. The Borough Council's policy committee approved a 250-year lease to the company. Well, Paul Gittings is lead councillor for sport and consumer services at Reading Borough Council. First and most important question, Paul, Lido or Lido?
I knew you were going to ask me that.
You don't know, do you? You don't know, do you? I could see it coming up, and I realise it's one of those words that I've never said in public because I don't know the pronunciation of it.
No, I think it could be optional, but that's there you go.
Let's go with Lido. What's going on, Paul? What's happening?
Well, as you said at the policy committee last night, we finally gave the mission to for the company who Thames Lido Limited. They run a successful Lido in Clifton, in Bristol, to take over the lease for this building. As people may recall, this has been a building that's been in a state of disrepair for a number of years and actually hasn't been used since 1974. It's Grade 2 listed, and Thames Lido are going to put some money in. They're going to invest about £3 million in upgrading it and restoring it to its former glory and to put it as a swimming pool and a spa complex.
£3 million is a lot of money, isn't it, when the councils and all different organisations are making cutbacks. Is it going to be worth this investment?
Well, that's what I was stressed. It's the private company that's putting in the investment, and I think probably those who know the history of Kingsmeadow Baths will know that, obviously, clearly, with, as you say, with councils, in our case, you know, facing councils of about £12 million per year since 2010, the notion of spending £3 million, £5 million on those baths was always going to be one that will be very difficult to achieve, I mean, not impossible. So we did a tendering process now just over a year ago, and Thames Lido, who, as I said, run a successful operation in Bristol at Clifton, they emerged as the successful bidders. And last night, essentially, we were giving the final permissions, and they've already got some pre-planning applications to do some much-needed restorative work on the roof, because unfortunately, it has fallen into a rather bad state over the years. So, you know, this is I'll say good news for, obviously, for the area, because it's going to restore that to its full glory. There's no use of loss of park space. There's going to be some landscaping around it. There is going to even be some public use. I mean, it's going to be. I think I would suggest say an upmarket offering. But there's going to be some public use as well, some community use, and as I say, no cost to the council taxpayer. So I think that's a very good deal for Reading.
It's not been in use since about 1974. Have we got any idea how long this project's going to take? When will it be up to its former glory again, Paul?
Well, they say the spring of 2016 makes sense to open just before the summer months. I mean, it is an outdoor pool, and I think some of your older listeners may recall swimming in there in the freezing cold waters. Some of my council colleagues said, "Oh, I remember going to swimming lessons there in the 60s. It was freezing cold." But yeah. I think it's going to be heated and pretty swanky, and you know, hopefully it will stay restored to full glory and something that people look on with a bit of pride.
Paul, listen, let's keep our fingers crossed the project goes ahead smoothly. Paul Gittings, lead councillor for sport and consumer services at Reading Borough Council. Oh, a little bit of Beatles, shall we? At 5 minutes to six? Yes, why not?
Oh, man, what a song, huh?
It's all right.
Rather brilliantly, the NME, people of a certain age will have read the NME, the New Musical Express, a pop magazine, guys. Their online website described George Harrison today as the late Beatles bass player. The NME think that George Harrison played bass in the Beatles? Are you for real? A couple of bits of travel. The M25 clockwise, junction 10 to junction 16, queuing traffic. The M4 London bound, junction 4B, slow traffic onto the M25 from the M4. There's a lot going on the road today. I can't fit it all in. Two more. Wynnersh, Reading Road, stop start from Simon's Lane to King Street Lane. And in Maidenhead, Bath Road, also stop start from Glenville Place to St Mark's Road. Coming up, we'll be talking to Shem to find out what to watch on the TV later tonight, and also getting an opinion of one local MP on what David Cameron should be doing in regards to the plane that was shot down over the Ukraine.
BBC Radio Berkshire with Ian Lee.
Now on BBC Radio Berkshire, Ian Lee.
And suddenly it's 4 minutes past six. It was 4 o'clock a few moments ago. It's nearly 7 o'clock. We're nearly done. It's nearly time for Mark Forrest. Well, we've got a bit more to squeeze in. In the last hour of the show, we'll be talking to Shem to find out what you should be watching on the TV. We'll also be speaking to one local MP who thinks that David Cameron needs to be a little bit tougher when it comes to dealing with President Putin. Don't forget, you can give us a call as well if you want, 0345 900 1041. None of you have been able to sell cricket to me. Well, we might be able to get a special guest to come on and see if he can do it. You can also send me a text, 81333, start your text box, or you can email me, ian.lee@bbc.co.uk.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
With Ian Lee.
Good afternoon. 8 minutes past six. This is Ian Lee sitting in for Phil. If you're missing him, he's doing breakfast, so you just have to get up earlier, I'm afraid. I know. 0345 900 1041 is the telephone number if you want to give us a call. Now, sanctions against Russian defence, energy and financial services sectors are being considered in the wake of the downing of Malaysia Airlines flight MH17. Ministers from the 28 EU member states have also agreed that the list of people hit by sanctions will be enlarged. But in the House of Commons earlier, Bracknell MP Philip Lee said the UK response has been too timid. Well, Philip joins me now. Philip, why do you think it's been too timid?
Good evening. I think when 300 innocent people are shot down by a surface-to-air missile over the continents of Europe, I think it really is a wake-up call. And I just think that when you sort of turn on your television and you're seeing journalists going through sort of evidence of the crime scene, I'm wondering why we didn't go in and secure that crime scene. It's perplexing. It's baffled me, that's for sure.
Who are you suggesting should have gone in to lock down that scene?
I just think that when you've had 300 people, over 200 of whom are citizens of countries that are signed up to NATO, shot down by a surface-to-air missile by separatists who are backed by proxy by the Russian state, I think that NATO should have made a decision and gone in. I'm under no illusions about what that means, but I think that it was an international crime scene, and I think it should have been secured. We knew where it was, and we should have secured it.
We couldn't have sent armed troops into the eastern Ukraine, though, could we?
At the request of the Ukrainians, we most certainly could. I mean, what are we suggesting here? That we should stand idly by and chastise people for having shot down over 80 babies who flew through the air, people who are just whose bodies are just littered all over the land? Are we honestly saying, are we proud of the fact that we're not able to secure those bodies and bring them home to their loved ones? I mean, I think we have the strength, and I just think we should have asserted that strength and secured the site. That doesn't mean we stay there. That doesn't mean we get involved in a civil war. But we have the capacity to do it. And it worries me, actually, that Western democratic nations were not prepared to do that. I think it was an opportunity for us to assert what is right in the world. And I think we made a mistake.
But once you, Philip, once you send in armed troops into eastern Ukraine, a disputed land, a war zone that's at the moment, as far as we know, being controlled by Russian separatists, is that not some declaration of war?
No, it's not. I'm not suggesting for one second that they would go into battle. They're securing the site. Really, to be honest with you, I really don't think that the separatists are going to want to pick a fight. I really don't. I think ultimately they would have known why it happened. What's going to be the outcome of this? We clearly know the evidence has been tampered with. It's been moved. We're struggling to get appropriate access to investigate what happened. What has to happen for us to wake up to the reality of what's going on there? And I just think, you know, what's the point otherwise of having NATO in these sort of situations? This was an attack upon defenseless, innocent civilians. And whether it was meant or not is for others to debate. It happened. We knew that it happened. We've all seen the dreadful footage. And I think we would have been well within our rights to secure the site.
One thing that has surprised me, Philip, is David Cameron seems to be waving his fists a lot and saying, well, we will impose more sanctions unless this gets sorted, and we will do this. It has struck me as slightly odd that he's not imposed those sanctions already. Instead of threatening them, I would have suspected he should have imposed them.
Yeah, but sure, in his defence, though, the problem is that sanctions like this are only going to be valid and are going to have an effect if all nations, all Western democracies, implement them. We have the French selling arms to the Russians. We have the Germans who have upwards of 30% of their gas needs being met via Gazprom. We're in a slightly less sort of compromised position in that regard, but we do have significant investments from Russia in London via the city. Ultimately, everybody has to work together, Ian, on this in order to bring Russia to its senses. I mean, it is not acceptable that this has happened. And ultimately, these separatists got a sophisticated piece of weaponry from somewhere, and the US are pretty convinced they know where. I think if we don't stand up to this and remain strong about this, I fear for the future, because at the moment we seem to have a bully on the block, and there's only one way to sort out a bully is to draw a line and to hold the line.
But Philip, you feel we should stand up to them, but you're sceptical of sanctions because of the impact it will have on us?
No, I'm not at all. I'm quite happy to see all the sanctions, and the Prime Minister has full support for me in trying to seek as strong as sanctions as is possible to secure with international partners. Absolutely. But I do think that I'm just rather ashamed that site has not been secured appropriately. We know where it is, and we know that there were 10 Britons on the ground there, and I think we should have gone in and collected those 10 Britons.
Philip, it's certainly something to think about, and I really appreciate your thoughts this evening. Thank you very much indeed. That's Bracknell MP Philip Lee. You might want to have your say on that. 0345 900 1041 is the telephone number if you want to have your say on that. So, here's the thing, okay? Now, and I feel slightly guilty even saying this, but earlier on in the show, I managed to speak to Sir Richard Hadlee. He was a famous cricketer. I don't get cricket. And I felt, I kind of confessed it to him, and he was very polite, and he took it well, and he tried to sell it to me, but I don't get it. Well, I'm joined by another legend, Jonathan Agnew's on the line. Good afternoon, Jonathan.
Not in Sir Richard Hadley's class, though, so don't put the two of us together, for goodness sake.
What? I'm assuming you've met the gentleman. What a nice...
Richard, I've played him many times.
What a nice fellow, isn't he?
He is, and he was one of the all-time greats. Played just up the road from me here in Nottinghamshire for many years, of course, and for New Zealand, and was knighted for his services to cricket. So you've had a good one on there.
He was really, really charming and an absolute gentleman. He was saying that he doesn't particularly miss playing cricket now because he's 63 and he's got a dodgy knee and all of that. Do you miss it at all?
Not really, I'm involved in cricket all the while. I've just sent an email out saying I'm having 2 days break, actually, because we've had 15 days on of non-stop talking cricket. And I think it doesn't matter, whatever you love, you need a bit of a break, don't you? Because it all starts up again. We're in the middle of a tense time as far as English cricket's concerned at the moment, and the next game is on Sunday. So for me, that means going down Saturday morning to Southampton, and on we go. And, it's a great job. I love commentating. But like anything, you just need a bit of a gap of time. But as far as your question is good, no, I don't miss playing. I mean, I loved playing, but it's hard work.
Is it hard work? Because listen, I don't get cricket. I've got a lot of respect for all of you. I don't get it. From someone who doesn't understand it, it does look like blokes just standing around then breaking for lunch.
Yeah, what's your sport then?
Well,
don't say football.
No, I'm not really a sports, but I like a bit of snooker.
Oh, that's exciting. That's really good for you, isn't it? Really burn off some calories whizzing around the table there.
That bending down and bending back up again can be very strenuous.
Yeah, it does. And cricket also requires a fair amount of intelligence and brain work.
That's me out then, sir. That's me out.
Oh, it's a great sport. I mean, a five-day test match, the ebbs and flows of a test match are absolutely brilliant. You can sit there for a long time without a lot going on, but every ball is critical. Every ball can spark something other way. It's a great sport. And what is very good about cricket is that there are three... really very different formats of it that aren't contrived. You know, you can have the test match, you've got your 50 overs cricket, which takes all day, and you've got your 2020, which is very popular as well, and they all work. And so whatever you fancy, whatever you like, you can go and watch or play a good game of cricket if you're good enough to play test cricket, and you know, they all work. They're not contrived. It's not like, you know, smaller pitches or, you know, fewer players or something. You know, it really works, and that's one reason why cricket.
Are you a fan of 2020? Because Sir Richard Hadley was kind of hinting that he thinks it's a little bit silly. I'm maybe putting words into his mouth there, but he didn't really buy into it, was what I picked up.
Well,
from
he wouldn't take it as seriously as he would a test match, certainly. I mean, I enjoy watching it, and you know, again, I commentate. It's very exciting, lots of crowd, you know, and the noise and enthusiasm and that stuff. It's not very it's not very deep. The cricket,
right.
It's a bit shallow, but it's improving. There's a few more shots to play and so on. But I mean, the problem is that you see so many 2020 games that they are quite forgettable. Whereas a test match, and I've probably seen, I don't know, 300 or 400 tests by now, I can just about remember, if I get a bit of a nudge, I can just about remember something about every test match that I've seen. I can do a World Cup 2020 as I did recently in Bangladesh and hardly remember anything about it, because it doesn't tax you intellectually, whereas test cricket, without sounding pompous about it, test cricket does, and you sit there and you just, you know, just quietly listen to the world going by and watch the games. You get into it, it's never too late, you know.
Well, I am a very, very lazy man, and I think that could be my dad. What is going on with England at the moment, Jonathan? They're not doing brilliantly, are they?
No, they're doing very badly, and that's why some of us have been kept very busy, because whenever it's busy and bad, and there's lots to talk about, and it's funny, when England's doing well, everything just coasts along quietly and nicely, and, you know, everything's rosy in the garden, but when things are going badly wrong, as they are now, and they've lost, what, 7 of their last 9, I think I'm right in saying, in the last test matches, which is far too many, and there's question marks over the captain and that sort of a thing, and social media these days makes it a much more lively environment. I mean, this is the first England captain we've had tried by social media, really, and it's not very nice out there, actually.
It's
extraordinary. I mean, you know, people used to lean on the bar in a pub and chat about cricket and those things, but now you just hammer out you know, stuffing 140 characters into a keyboard and fire it off into someone's computer.
Oh, you can send it directly to the person.
Absolutely.
Imagine getting a message on your phone saying you're not very good at your job.
It happens all the time.
Yeah.
I've probably had about 500 of those today.
Yeah,
so,
I get it.
You know,
yeah.
So it depends what mood you're in. I can go through moments of mass blocking and to see people away, or you can take, somehow you've got to find a common ground and not get sucked into it. But it's, with all that going on, I know it's hard for Alistair Cook, the captain. He doesn't do social media, but his wife does, right. And all of those around him do.
Yeah.
And they're reading it, and they're seeing some pretty vitriolic stuff written by people who have to be honest, who don't, you know, are not particularly well placed to be criticising someone like that. And that they'll hate me for saying it, but that is the bottom line. You know, someone like Alistair Cook, when you see somebody just completely rubbishing him on Twitter, you think, what on earth? You know, so that's where we are these days, isn't it, with social media and Twitter. It has its good sides, and you have to accept some of the perhaps not quite so good as well.
The keyboard warriors. Jonathan, yep. I really appreciate you coming on at short
Absolute
notice. Thank you very
pleasure.
Much for your time. Cheers. That's Jonathan Agnew, another cricketing legend. I like the uniforms. I like the cricketing uniforms. Is that a way in?
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Travel you trust.
Every 15 minutes.
And as it happens.
I've spoken to two cricketing legends this afternoon. I'm impressed with that. I just don't know anything about the game. It's 6:20. It's BBC Radio Berkshire. Let's give you the travel. The M25 clockwise junction 10 to junction 16. It's busy. And it's also busy anti-clockwise 13 to junction 11. The M4 London bound. That slip road at junction 4B to the M25. Just, you know, stay away. Reading Cemetery Junction, slow in and out of town around Sutton Scenes. Also Oxford Road, queuing from Beresford Road to Wilson Road. And let's give you one more at random. Ascot, London Road, queues from Long Hill Road to Heatherwood Roundabout.
See Berkshire's travel cameras online
at bbc.co.uk/Berkshire.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Let's get the news now. Here's Tara Maxwell. Right, I'm joined again by Shem. Shem, nice to talk to you again.
Yes.
You've got some more TV choices for this evening.
Yeah, only a couple tonight. Because
why?
There's a lot of regular stuff on the channels.
Come on, man, put your finger out.
Well,
it's a bit slack.
Exactly.
Poor show.
The BBC, they're going to clear the decks come tomorrow, and you won't get anything other than Commonwealth Games on BBC One or indeed BBC Three.
Permission to speak freely?
Go on.
This
then.
Is blasphemy amongst the BBC, so yeah. I have to whisper it. I can't stand sport. I don't like sport. So we've had the blooming, what was it, the World Cup.
The World Cup.
We've had the tennis, Wimbledon.
Yeah.
And now we've got the Commonwealth Games. And then the football season will start
again.
You
missed the golf all this weekend, which was fantastic.
Oh, no, it wasn't. It was really, really dull, Shem, and you just don't appreciate that. How long does the Commonwealth Games go on for?
It's, I think, 11 days in total.
That's not too bad.
Yeah.
I don't mind the short runs. The 400 metres and below, I can kind of enjoy that because it's quick, but the rest of it...
So you're not going to be watching hour after hour of hockey or
I suspect not. Well, okay, so what have we got? We've only got two shows. What have we got tonight then?
Well, we'll start off with the new series of Coast, the second programme of that, and we have got secret paths around Britain. So basically, not well known sort of walks around the coastline that take you to some quite wondrous sites. Nick Crane, who is he's the BBC's map man, he's on Coast, he's always doing walking. He's walking his greatest walk, a 3-day coastal odyssey, he describes it, around Cape Roth. I didn't even know there was a Cape Roth in Britain, but I think it's up in Scotland. He's going to show us that. And, Coast is one of those programmes that's sort of been on forever and ever and ever. It was Series 9 now, I think. And they've done every bit of coast around Britain and sort of France and Holland, you name it. It was sort of running out of coast, I would think. But no, they've come up with some new things, so I should be looking forward to that.
Are you a walker, Shem? I myself am a very lazy man. You may have got that from my anti-sport rant.
Yeah.
I'm a very lazy man. So I like watching these programmes from my sofa while I'm eating a 2-for-1 pizza, but the actual thought of going out and doing these walks is a little bit beyond me.
Well, you see, I cheat slightly because I only walk where... up in Norfolk, where it's very, very flat.
Yeah,
I can't do hills. Not remotely interested in hills. So walking in Scotland, I don't think would be particularly interesting to me. But no, I can understand your worry. I have many, many children, and they have a very similar attitude to yours. In they like watching it, they don't like doing it.
But you say many, many children, Shem. How many is many?
I have
many?
Four daughters.
Oh blimey!
None of whom have excelled at any physical activity that I can think of.
I've got two boys. They're four and two, and they won't. They're completely nuts. They won't sit down for a second.
No, no. Well, that's there may be the E numbers, but no, I know what you mean. Boys, very different. Girls, far more sedentary if they've got any sense about them.
Okay, so we've got Coast BBC Two at 9 o'clock, 10:45 on BBC One. What have we got?
We've got Sir Chris Hoy, How to Win Gold. Now, I know this may not be your cup of tea, because he's going to explain to you how the dedication needed to win a gold medal. Now, he's roping in some people like Sir Steve Redgrave.
Oh, yes.
Who, of course, his big thing was the fact that he would train on Christmas Day, not because it made him any faster or better, just safe in the knowledge that his opponents were all sitting around eating Christmas dinner and he wasn't.
Yes.
Which, you know, gives you the psychological advantage. And that seems to be the message here. I mean, when he's talking to Andy Murray, Rebecca Adlington, all these very, very accomplished athletes, is that you have to not think about it very much. Because the more you think about it, the more the fear comes in and the more chances are you're likely to lose.
But still, Christmas Day, though. Christmas Day. Whatever your religious beliefs or otherwise, Christmas Day. You'd know for a fact there's good TV on Christmas Day.
There's fantastic TV on Christmas Day, and why would you want to be on a rowing machine down the bottom of the garden?
Poor family.
I don't know, but there you go. Well, he has five gold medals. I don't have one, so that's probably the difference.
Fair play, Shem. I have none as well. Excellent stuff. I will speak to you tomorrow.
You
cheers,
indeed.
Shem.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Travel you trust.
Every 15 minutes.
And as it happens.
It's coming up to 6:30. It's BBC Radio Berkshire. This is Ian Lee. Let's have some of the travel, shall we? Yes. M25 clockwise, junction 10 to junction 16, queuing traffic. The M4 westbound, junction 4B to junction 5. There's slow traffic due to a broken down vehicle. The M3 southbound, junction 2 to junction 3. Heavy traffic due to an accident just before Bagshot in the outside lane. Thank you, Kevin, for that. Reading, Southampton Street, very heavy traffic heading to town from Surrey Road to Mill Lane. Caversham, slow traffic in all directions towards the bridge. Peppard Road, Prospect Street and Church Street are all busy tonight. And let's do one more. Wynnosh, Reading Road, stop start from Simon's Lane to King Street Lane.
Get the latest travel you trust online
at bbc.co.uk/Berkshire.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
It's 6:30. Let's get the news now with Tara Maxwell. Hey, listen, I've just got to read something I've seen on Twitter. I hope you don't mind.
Yes, go for it.
This is brilliant. This is from someone called Charlotte Harwood.
Mm.
My mum has just... mums are brilliant, right? But my mum is brilliant, but she's completely and utterly bonkers.
As mums should be.
As they should be. And I can imagine her doing this. Charlotte says, my mum has just blown my mind. She's only just realised she can withdraw cash from any ATM. She's
amazing.
Been going to the same ATM for 15 years.
That's amazing. But do you know, my mum does something similar. And I think she knows she can use it anyway. But that one is the one where you're not going to get mugged. That's one, the one that you know is going to give you money.
She's got a lucky cash machine.
Yeah.
Man alive. Mums are bonkers.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Berkshire News and Berkshire Stories with Ian Lee.
How can you not love the King? I was so excited. I'm on Twitter, at Ian Lee. I was so excited. Dave Davis from the Kinks is following me on Twitter. Oh, I'm being followed by a kink, by a monkey.
Let me say the same.
I'm sorted. Hey, Mark Forrest tonight, they're doing a cracking story. I know, I did it this morning. Milton Keynes, get this right, there's a councillor in Milton Keynes who wants Greasy Spoon restaurants, I use the term very loosely, CAFs, he wants them to sell salads. He wants them to sell... Hang on a second, if you're going into a Greasy Spoon, you're going to get... bacon butty, or you're going to get beans and some black pudding. You're not going because you want to have a bit of salad, are you? No one would do that. Anyway, that's Mark Forrest in 12 and a half minutes. Let's have some Blondie first.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Travel you trust.
As it happens.
Nearly time for Mark Forrest, but let's have another quick look at the roads, shall we? Hey, M25, just don't go anywhere near it. It stinks at the moment. Clockwise, junction 10 to junction 16, it is busy. And anti-clockwise, 13 to junction 11, they're very, very busy. The M4 London bound, junction 10 to junction 89, Maidenhead, there's debris all over the road, fallen off the back of a lorry. It's fallen off the back of a lorry. Thank you to Lewis for that. The M4 westbound, junction 4B to junction 5, slow traffic due to a broken down vehicle. The M3 southbound, junction 2 to junction 3, heavy traffic. That's due to an accident just before Bagshot in the outside lane. Thank you, Kevin, for letting us know about that. What else have we got? Let's squeeze a few more in, shall we? Reading, Southampton Street, very heavy traffic heading to town from Surrey Road to Mill Lane. Cemetery Junction, also in Reading. It's slow in and out of town around Sutton Seeds. One more Reading one, Oxford Road, queuing from Beresford Road to Wilson Road. Caversham, slow traffic in all directions towards the bridge. Peppard Road, Prospect Street and Church Street are all very, very busy tonight. So I would suggest, if you have any opportunity to avoid them, then do so. Winnersh, Reading Road, stop start from Simon's Lane to King Street Lane. Arborfield, School Road, queues from Barkham Road to Eversley Road. And let's pick two more. Maidenhead, Bath Road, stop start from Glenville Place to St Mark's Road and Ascot. London Road, queues from Long Hill Road to Heatherwood Roundabout. Hey, that's pretty much about it for me. Thank you very much, everybody who took part in the show. Don't forget, if you want to get in touch between now and tomorrow at 4 o'clock, you can send me an email, ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. I spell Ian the correct way, of course, the Scottish way, I-A-I-N. If you don't put the I in, it all gets to a random fella. He gets very upset and very confused.